Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. As usual, I'm speaking to you from the borough of Queens here in the city of New York. I want to thank each of you for listening to the show, making it one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. I also want to invite you to continue sending along whatever comments you have about this show to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions@taylor@gmail.com. We, of course, do want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Well, this week's sponsors are Novo Resources, Hannon Metals, Irving Resources, Lion One Metals, SK Mining Corp, El Oro Resources, Firefox Gold, and Timberline Resources. I've titled today's show, Why Gold's 2021 Disappointment. Why? Why did we have a disappointment in 2021 for gold and silver when everything else seemed to be lining up in favor of the precious metals? And what about 2022? Alistair McLeod, Michael Hudson, and Michael Oliver return as guests this week. 2021 was indeed a disappointing year for profit-seeking precious metals investors, but for the few who look to accumulate gold and silver as the ultimate insurance against runaway inflation, it has been an unexpected bonus. After reviewing the current year to gain a perspective for 2022, Alistair McLeod will analyze the cause for the decline in the value of the true market-driven money, namely gold and silver, measured in fake money, that is, fake fiat money, dollars and other currencies that are required to be used by governments around the world. And Alistair will be with me in the second half of today's show when he will provide a summary of the outlook for the dollar, the euro, and the financial system, as well as the outlook for gold and silver, driven by those factors. One hint is the key issue is the interest rate outlook and how it will impact financial markets. Alistair believes markets are wholly unprepared for the consequences of the massive expansion of currency and credit over the next couple of years, not to mention the last couple of years. So also, Alistair will touch on geopolitical factors that come into play, especially regarding China and Russia on the one hand, the United States on the other side of that growing tension. In the second segment, Michael Hudson will join me in just right after our first commercial break to talk about Hannon Metals' discovery in Peru. They are on to what looks like one of the largest sedimentary-hosted copper and silver deposits. Well, we can't call it a deposit yet. Targets, but evidence of a massive sedimentary-hosted near-surface target that Michael Hudson will talk about right after our first commercial break. But right now, I'm really happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is with me to share his latest thoughts on the markets as we head into this, as we're already in this 2022, what can we look forward to going into this year? Thank you for joining me, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Always good to have you with us, and it's olivermsa.com for those of you who should really check out Michael's work and sign up for one of his services at least. Okay, so you spent some time in your last weekly, your 360 letter that comes out on Saturday or Sunday, usually Sunday, I believe, and it said the lead topics were the equity markets and with a focus on the S&P and the NASDAQ 100. And I see the NASDAQ was down pretty hard earlier today. What do you see? I mean, there have been an awful lot of people for several years now who have thought that the equity markets are overpriced, but that's not to say they can't become a lot more overpriced. Do you think that might be the case in 2022?
No, I don't think so. They're overpriced, okay? And we also, when you go to your computer screen, go to a monthly time scale, type in the S&P 500. The NASDAQ 100, and take a look at it. And look at the bear market. Remember the devastating bear market of 2000 to 2002, the dot-com bubble broke. Okay, go back and look at that on that chart that includes data up to date. And then go look at the 2007-2009 bear market. You can barely see those bear trends on the monthly price chart. They hardly show up, and yet they were devastating. Without a doubt, the biggest technical bubble and probably fundamental bubble in stock market history. And it's been propelled by investors moving the money where the Fed wanted them to move it, namely into stocks, and to certain other assets like junk corporate bonds and so forth, and they've done it for 12-plus years. And the problem is that history shows that investor preferences can shift. And it's our view that when you start to fracture the stock market, and our argument is we've got technical reasons based on long-term momentum that say you can't afford right now a several percent, let's call it 4 or 5% drop in the stock market. If you do, we're going to blow so many long-term momentum trend structures that it will say to us, okay, that was the top of the bubble. Mm-hmm. Now, usually when bubbles break, they're pretty nasty. That doesn't mean they crash. In fact, the 2000-2002, there was never a crash in that. 2007 to 2009, hardly you could find any point in there that was the dimension of what you call a crash. So we could start a major bear market that deflates this overpriced asset class, and a lot of that money will start to move elsewhere. And we've already seen it late last year, last summer and fall. We came out with reports arguing for a commodity, quote, explosion. Well, we got one. Basically, you've had a doubling in price from around 50-something on the Bloomberg Commodity Index up to 106. But when you stand back and look at it, you know, well, everybody gets scared by the, quote, commodity inflation. The Fed doesn't like that. They like stock inflation. Mm-hmm. They won't admit that term, but they like that. Or they like junk bond inflation. They don't like it when it goes into commodities. So commodities woke up without, in other words, some investors said, okay, I'm going to move into a low-priced asset category that's not going to go to zero. And it's been beat up for so long that the risk is off the page in terms of being definable, and therefore there's only reward. But when you look at the Bloomberg, it's really only one-third of the way back up to the price highs it saw in 2011. Mm-hmm. Now, gold, we know, peaked also in 2011 and collapsed 50%. Bloomberg collapsed more than that. But Bloomberg's only a third of the way back to the high, and everybody's screaming, how come gold's not exploding? Well, gold doubled from its 2015 low and is trading on either side of the peak monthly closes in 2011. So gold is still well ahead when you stand back and look at the big vista of the commodity price explosion. You know, it's gained, it doubled, and it's holding its ground here. The peak monthly close in 2011 was 1825. We closed last month at 1828.60. Okay. And everybody's talking about how bad year it was for gold. Gold dropped 3.5% December to December close. Okay? So it wasn't that bad of a year. Yes, the miners got beat up, and silver got beat up more, you know, on a percent basis. But by our metrics, they're still intact for more upside. In fact, we've got some numbers that aren't too far above the market that we want to see achieved that will indicate that silver and the miners are now in gear with what gold, I think, has done in the last quarter, which was crossed some numbers that we thought were pretty important. But we also wanted to see silver agree with it, and the miners agree with it, and they didn't. They came up close to our numbers but failed to cross them. Now, those numbers, those breakout numbers that we defined via our own proprietary methods, have adjusted down for this quarter. And it won't take a large rally at all for those metrics to be crossed, at which case then we see a chorus that says gold, silver, and miners all agree we're going back up. So that's what we're watching. But I think the pivotal asset category to watch is the stock market, also the junk corporate bond market. If those asset categories start to break, now they'll break our numbers before they alarm anybody else, but if they start to concern analysts, investors, and so forth with doubt, not necessarily with great pain, but with, you know, gee, what's going on here?
Yeah.
If that starts to occur, the Fed's going to get nervous because that's an asset category that is off the page, bubbled. And if it starts to come undone, the Fed will have the greatest chore it ever had in its history, trying to save a bubble collapse that they created themselves. It's going to be an intellectual problem for them, and it's going to be like sitting in a movie theater with some popcorn and laughing, as far as I'm concerned, because they've created a situation of their own, you know, their own construction that could come unwound. And I think if we see those categories start to break down, that's when more and more investors are going to say, okay, I want to shift some money.
Mm-hmm. So how are the gold and silver shares looking right now? I know on the gold, GDX and GDXJ, are they anywhere near some important trigger points?
In fact, the high we made in November, if you go look at your charts and you see the silver high was up at 2550 area.
Uh-huh.
And they failed to close over a certain level that we needed to see exceeded on a weekly close to generate a what we call a quarterly buy signal. So they failed to do it, though gold did. But silver didn't agree. So then we dropped back down. But now that number has adjusted, and I won't get real specific because that's what our subscribers pay for, but it won't take a lot above the recent high, the high of this of where we closed last month, which was 2350 area. You get up about a dollar above there, it's going to look pretty good. So you don't have to go back to the November highs that we saw mm-hmm. in the gold miners, the rally mm-hmm. high that failed, and which was above 35 on GDX, for example. We don't have to go above there to break out. And mm-hmm. silver got up to 25 in the mid-25s. So you don't have to get back mm-hmm. there to break out via our metrics, in which case we will issue a report saying, okay, we're full. It's a full court press now. All mm-hmm. the metals are in agreement. And I think that probably will be somewhat coincident with the fracturing of the stock market,
mm-hmm.
Fracturing of our numbers, that is. And again, our mm-hmm. numbers aren't that far below. So you get to our trigger numbers, and we're not going to have alarm in the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be breaking stuff that's too obvious, but for us mm-hmm. it'll be obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point we can say, okay, there's an asset class shift underway here that's going to gain steam.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly
and
no doubt
fracture Fed assumptions and policies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and confidence is lost. And it seems to me that a logical place, and maybe I'm talking my book, I know I'm always bullish on gold and gold shares and to a fault sometimes, but I think that what we do know from a fundamental point of view is that the earnings are extremely strong for the gold miners, the senior, the mm-hmm. big boys, are doing extremely well. Their balance sheets have never been stronger, at least in recent decades. And they're earning lots of money at current gold prices. So gold, you know, as you say, it's not as disappointing as some of us bulls felt it was last year. But nonetheless, you know, it just seems that would be, you know, when people start looking around, where can I go for safety? That's what they start thinking when things fall apart. I wonder, the equity market starts to crumble, and where are they going to go? The other thing I wanted to ask you, Michael, with just a minute left here, the U.S. dollar, if we get a meltdown in the equity market, however you want to describe it, a bear market in equities, that usually portends a bull market for the dollar. A lot of times it does because there's so much short covering that has to be done, dollar short covering around the world.
Yeah, I'll disagree. Pardon me.
Uh-huh. Sure.
If you go back and really look at it over uh-huh. 50 years of dollar index action and S&P action, the correlation is not that good. And now uh-huh. there is the memory in everybody's mind of last March of 2020, where there was mm-hmm. a brief panic in the final days of the stock market drop collapse where the dollar, there was a panic to buy dollars.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as that was based on the need for dollars for certain categories of debt that had to be covered.
Exactly. So,
but it was
exactly.
a very brief panic. As soon as that was over, the dollar immediately collapsed back down. And mm-hmm. if you go back over the last year plus, you'll find there's a high correlation between dollar index movement on the upside, which has been positive on monthly momentum, just like the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I would argue right now that what the dollar just did yesterday, the low that it made, it dropped about 20, 30 decimal points and then took off to the upside again back in a range where we've been for several months, by the way, 96 area.
Mm-hmm.
You go back through the low of the month, approach 95 again, let's define it that way, on the dollar index, and I think it's over.
Mm-hmm.
We have enough technical argument at that point to say the dollar not only is the monthly momentum trend that's been underway for more than a year, much like the S&P 500, is going to go down, and I think it will correlate to the S&P. Also, I don't think we're going to get a crash mm-hmm. event in the stock market, which means we're not going to get a replica of that spike that occurred in the dollar index back in March of 2020 to the upside. Mm-hmm. Instead, they look technically to be in sync with each other now. So I would, that harsh memory of March of 2020, no doubt everybody remembers because it was very sharp. But I think that was a deviation, actually.
Mm-hmm. And a short response.
And a very short-term one, too, as well.
Short-term.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they might, some of that money could also go into T-bonds then, or at what point do you think the T-bond market?
I don't trust T-bonds long-term, or T-notes. Yeah. Nor the German bonds, nor the JGB bonds.
Yep.
They look like they're going to go down, rates are going to go up. But I would hesitate being short that market. I would watch it and use it as a means of measurement of certain things. But I think if there is a brief drop in the stock market of, let's say, 10% dimension type of thing, you could get a panic buying temporarily of asset managers simply parking money in long bonds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a flight to safety. In other words, when they get panicked, what do they do? You know, there's two places they generally go. One would be gold, the other is the T-bonds. Ultimately, I don't think T-bonds will do well. I think their prices will go down, yields will go up. But I think there is a distinct risk of a sharp upside spike in price if the stock market gets a shin broken, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it's sort of an unsafe position to have, I think, right now. Now, if there were such a spike in T-bonds to the upside, yield drop, because of the brief, you know, the first initial drop in the stock market, let's say, at that point, maybe you can look at T-bonds as a short position. But right now, I'm a little squeamish on that.
Of course,
if T-bonds do turn into a bear, which I think they ultimately will because of monetary inflation ultimately is going to catch up to them, that leaves one alternative.
Gold. Yeah. All right, so real quickly, Michael, higher or lower at the end of 2022? Gold, silver?
Oh, higher, much higher.
A dollar?
Dollar, lower.
U.S. T-bonds,
I'm going to guess the dollar, which is now in the mid-90s, could be in the mid-70s without a lot of effort.
In
a span of a year or two. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be very devastating for a lot of markets. Should also put some wind at the back of gold and silver. And commodities in general, I would think. I would just say that I saw a chart. I'm not sure what commodity index was used, but the chart showed commodities relative to the equity markets are still almost as low, if not as low as ever. I think it was measured against equities because equities have just taken off, you know. Good inflation as far as the Fed's concerned and Nancy Pelosi is concerned. It's great. Wonderful inflation. But don't let the cost of their whatever they buy go up a little bit, and they could care less about the millions of average people. Anyway, that's just a little editorializing from my point of view. Mike, I want to thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. Always of great value. Thank you so much,
and we'll
look to do it again in a couple of weeks. Folks, we do have to go to break now, but don't go away because Michael Hudson will be with us, president of Hannon Metals. And if you like to speculate on exploration stocks, this is one you might want to keep your eyes on because it's selling it for pennies. It's got $20 million market cap, and it's got a huge target. It's a sedimentary-hosted near-surface copper-silver belt that looks very, very promising. It's in Peru, but Michael will be with us to talk about all of those issues right after break, so don't go away.
SK Mining Corp, trading under the symbol ESK on the TSX Venture and ESKYF on the OTCQB, is a mineral exploration company targeting precious metals, rich VMS deposits in the heart of British Columbia's Golden Triangle. SK Mining controls a prospective land package totaling 130,000 acres, which lies across a geologic trend that once hosted the prolific SK Creek Mine. With a world-renowned geological team, funding in place, and shareholders such as Eric Sprott, SK Mining is on the cusp of a world-class discovery. Go to skmining.com to subscribe for updates.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.